From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Growing up, you might remember learning about the birds and the bees at school. Or maybe you were one of those kids whose mom or dad sat them down for the talk. A lot has changed since those days. There have now been two editions of the National Sexuality Education Standards aimed at modernizing sex education in the U.S. And last year, Governor J.B. Pritzker signed a law making Illinois the first state to officially adopt the new National Sexual Education Standards. But that move has not been without controversy. Advocates for the national standards say they help students learn how to have healthy and safe relationships and embrace those who identify as LGBTQ+. Some critics, however, say the law teaches too much too soon. Joining us now to talk about the state of sexual education in Illinois is Christine Harley, CEO of the Sexuality Information and Education Council of the United States, one of the organizations behind the new national guidelines. Christine, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Also with us is Alex Liu, co-founder of Hera Productions, which made the documentary A Sexplanation, taking a number of different angles on sex education in the U.S. Alex, welcome to the 21st Show to you as well.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And finally, we're joined by Steve Wilder, the superintendent of Sycamore County School District 427 in Sycamore, Illinois. The district decided to opt out of the new standards in Illinois. Superintendent Wilder, welcome to the 21st Show.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you for coming on. And listeners, as ever, we want to invite you to join our conversation at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. What did you learn about sexual education in your school days? We'd love to hear about your experiences and what you think of where the curriculum is going in the present day. Again, 800-222-9455 or tweet us at 21st Show. So, Christine, I want to start with you. As I mentioned, your organization played a major role in developing the new national standards. Can you tell us what is actually in them? What's the sort of top line summary?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that our organization works on is advancing sex education policies across the country. And that's very difficult to do when there's no federal guidance or standards for what is should be included in sex education. And so CECUS, alongside of Advocates for Youth and ANSWER, developed the National Sex Ed Standards to give school districts and school administrators some guidance on what the best practices as it pertains to being evidence-based, age-appropriate, and inclusive for young people throughout kindergarten through 12th grade. And sorry, I don't know why I have a frog in my throat.
No, that's all right. It happens. Go ahead.
But what it really does is it builds off of child development practices, medical expertise, and other subject matter experts to develop information that is inclusive around adolescent sexual health, reproduction, reproductive health care, biology. We've also expanded in the second edition to really open up the curriculum around healthy relationships, understanding around consent, bodily autonomy, setting personal boundaries, how to navigate these things. And so we are seeing the National Sex Ed Standards that result in tremendously improved adolescent sexual health outcomes. And so those are the standards that we're trying to use to help more states and more schools implement programs that benefit young people.
Alex, I want to bring you into the conversation now. What do you think about these new national sex education standards?
I think, you know, they're probably the most evidence-based standards that we have. In making this documentary, one of the things you realize very quickly is that there's no money for research around sexual health. So I wish there were more. I wish we could really test a lot of these things. But I think it's clear, you know, talking early and often around sex and sexuality from as early as possible just results in so many better outcomes. And I think we also have to be really clear when we talk about what is sex education, because I think many of us had many different experiences when it came to sex education. When I went to school in the 90s and 2000s, during the HIV/AIDS crisis, really what I got wasn't sex education per se. It was much more disease education, It was much more pregnancy education, maybe a little bit around consent. But sex is so much more than just pregnancy disease and consent. You know, it's such a complicated, complex issue. And I think for the most part, you know, now with the internet, you can find a lot of that information online. Kids really, you know, are so fluent, and they can find how to prevent pregnancy, how to prevent disease, how to report assault. But what they don't have is, how do I make this sex thing go well for me? That's the question we all have. Like, how do I make this very scary, complicated, but also meaningful, joyful thing go well in my life? And frankly, I think we need some kind of way to, or we need to have that debate, I guess, around what is the vision for sex education? Is it just to instill fear into kids to prevent the worst possible outcomes? Or is it to try to create a society around how to make sex go well for as many people as possible, and which I would argue is a huge societal good.
Interesting. Let me ask you, Alex. So, what you in your work on this film, you did a lot of comparative sort of research among different states. How does Illinois compare to other states in this regard?
You know, Illinois is at the top of the list, I think, in many respects. Though I think if you were to look at internationally, that's not saying much, unfortunately, for the United States. But I would say Illinois still doesn't necessarily mandate a lot of this education. Local, hyper-local, you know, school boards can decide whether or not to opt in or opt out of this curricula. I think we can have that debate about what's, you know, the proper role of this legislation. But, you know, for the most part, you know, you do have to be medically accurate. You do have to talk about HIV/AIDS in a non-judgmental way. You do have to talk about consent, and you do have to talk about bodily autonomy, which feels like a low bar, but is kind of the best we have in this country at the moment.
All right, let me take a moment to remind listeners, this is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking about sexual education in Illinois. Illinois was the first state to adopt the new national standards. Local school districts can, as a whole, public schools can choose to adopt those themselves or opt out of them. Individual parents can also opt out of sexual education. We're talking about this with Christine Harley, CEO of the Sexuality Information and Education Council of the U.S., Alex Liu, who is a filmmaker who made the documentary A Sexplanation, and Superintendent Steve Wilder of Sycamore County School District 427. And Superintendent Wilder, I want to bring you into the conversation now. So your school district decided to opt out of these new national standards that Illinois adopted. What went into that decision? Why was that the case?
Yeah, it's a really good question, and I appreciate the opportunity to be on the show. I applaud the work that's been done, and some of the points that we considered have been raised to some degree already. Public education is very much in Illinois. There's kind of been an ongoing push for local school districts to have autonomy to make some of these decisions in terms of what's in the curriculum and policies and things of that nature. I would agree that sex education has changed quite a bit since the days when I was in junior high school and high school. And at the same time, the world has changed. So there's a lot of different issues that are out there that kids are dealing with today. What we decided to do in Sycamore was kind of review the sex education curriculum that we had in place, have a conversation internally about how we felt like that met the needs of our students and our community, and then try to using our sense of the values in our community and what our community really desired was to make a decision about whether or not to, first of all, change our curriculum and what we were presenting to students, and then, see how that aligned with the new sex education standards. So I think one of the things that I want to be really careful to point out is that we didn't make a judgment or a decision on the standards themselves. I think there's one of the points made earlier was that there really isn't a nationwide set of standards for school districts to follow. So I applaud that work. And this isn't our decision wasn't a judgment on those standards. It really came down to what we valued in our community, what our families valued. And we appreciated the opportunity to have access to these standards, review them, have some conversation, and then decide what we felt was best for our community. So in the end, we felt like we had a curriculum that met our students' needs, and we decided to stay with that.
What sort of things do your students learn about that maybe they wouldn't if the national, if you had, you know, sort of just adopted the national standards, sort of cut and paste style?
Yeah, so we have some of the, I think, the traditional, content, puberty, adolescence, things like that. When it comes to some of the more progressive topics in the standards, I would say that our community probably errs on the side of being a little bit more conservative. And one of the things that we heard from our families and parents when the standards were released was that they wanted to have the opportunity to have some of those conversations about human sexuality, at home with their children in an environment where they could talk about their personal values, their family values, answer some of their students' questions, and then make a decision about topics that they felt were probably appropriate, age appropriate for their children, and maybe put off topics that were maybe a little bit more mature, maybe a little bit more advanced. So that's kind of where we fell down and what motivated our decision.
Alex, in making your movie, what did you learn about the fears or maybe the reluctance of parents? If these conversations are supposed to be happening in homes and not in schools, what are parents bringing to the table?
Yeah, I do want to first just state, I have a tremendous amount of empathy for school districts and school boards having to navigate the politics of sex education. It's sex is such an values-based thing. You know, everyone has very intense emotions around sex, especially when it's, you know, what values are we instilling around sex to our children? And so I have a lot of amount of empathy there, you know, and I also do agree that ultimately parents set the stage for a child's sexual health. You know, I think the evidence is very clear that as long as you have one trusted adult in which you can ask, you know, all of your questions around sex and feel like it's a safe space, a non-judgmental space, that child is going to grow up to be much more sexually healthy than their peers. You know, my concern around that argument is that, are these conversations actually happening in the home? You know, I grew up, with a pretty, moderate family who didn't really have any qualms about sex and sexuality, but it was just never a conversation that happened because they were waiting for me to talk about it and I was waiting for them to talk about it because we don't have the modeling. You know, most of us, even our most liberal people in this country, don't really have the model of how do you have these conversations, again, you know, openly, honestly, non-judgmentally. And I think it starts really early. I think, you know, when you think about, you know, did I ever hear my parents say the words, and I'm even kind of getting nervous saying this on public television, you know, penis, vagina, vulva, clitoris, testicles, you know, these, you know, just like you would say ears, eyes, nose, you know, elbow, you know, I can already sense my parents were uncomfortable talking about that. And I think also, and then to go to talk about anything else, you know, talk about masturbation, to talk about intercourse, all these things, I think it's even more difficult for parents for good reason. You know, we all live in this kind of the same culture and I get nervous talking about this too. But I worry a lot about, are parents actually having these conversations? And if they're having these conversations, are the conversations based on a strong scientific health-based research? And I would argue that for the most part, it's not, because none of us have this training. So I think there is a really good argument that while parents need to be, parental rights need to be respected in terms of the values around sex, there is a role for educators to provide medically accurate, real truthful information around sex and sexuality. And it's in combination, do we create an environment for kids to grow up to be sexually healthy adults?
Okay, we need to take a break here pretty soon. So I'm gonna tee up the next part of our conversation before we do that. And Christine, when we come back, I'm going to direct this question to you. But we sent out a text message to our listeners who have opted into that service. And we asked, Illinois' new standards for sexual education in public schools are in effect this fall. They're meant to be more inclusive, but a number of school districts are opting out of the requirements. Are you satisfied with what your child is learning in school about sexuality, consent, and safety? Are you opting out of your school's offerings? Who should be teaching children about human sexuality? We actually got very few responses. I think that goes to Alex's point that a lot of people don't like talking about this stuff, especially on the radio maybe, but one response that stood out to us said, quote, schools are already on pins and needles trying to deal with this situation. Spotlighting it might make things worse Your questions are leading. I really wish you were not even doing this segment. And I should add, our producer, Jose, when he was researching this segment, got pushback from a health policy expert at the University of Illinois Chicago who thought we should not be having this conversation. So we're going to talk about that, whether these are things we should even be talking about sex education in Illinois. If you want to join us, be brave. Venture into our conversation at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. We're going to continue with Christine Harley from the Sexuality Information and Education Council of the United States, filmmaker Alex Liu, whose documentary is A Sexplanation, and Stephen Wilder, superintendent of the Sycamore Community School District 427 in Sycamore, Illinois. Again, 800-222-9455 to join our conversation. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about sexual education in Illinois. Illinois became the first state to adopt the national standards last year, and school districts can follow that or they can opt out and stick with their own curriculum. Individual families can also opt out. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation. We have a number of calls coming in. We're going to get to those in just a moment. Let me remind listeners of our guests. We're speaking with Superintendent Stephen Wilder from Sycamore Community School District 427 that opted out of the curriculum in favor of its own, and Alex Liu, who is a filmmaker from company Hera Productions, which he co-founded, and his documentary is A Sexplanation, taking a number of different angles on sex education in the United States, and Christine Harley, CEO of the Sexuality Information and Education Council of the United States. And Christine, I want to come back to you because I teed this up before the break. We got a listener. I'll just sum up. I really wish you were not even doing this segment. What do you think about that?
Yeah, so I wanted to make one point earlier to supplement what Alex was saying. You know, one of the things that we wanted to just acknowledge is that kids are already developing their identities around gender, sexual orientation, and understanding of family structures quite early on, some starting as young as three. And we also know that kids are starting puberty you know, as early as fourth and fifth grade. And so part of what the national sex ed standards are intended to do is to provide young people with age-appropriate, developmentally appropriate information as those changes are happening in real time. So that was just one thing I wanted to say. But as far as, you know, wanting to not talk about this subject, you know, it is really unfortunate that there has been a very vocal minority that is aggressively attacking sex education and other inclusive programming in schools. It puts our children at great risk of being vulnerable to bullying, to mental health concerns, to not being seen in their curriculum. And we really need to recognize that the majority of parents, the majority of school educators, the majority of young people want this information. We know that sexuality information, you know, protects against these things, bullying and abuse, helping to develop healthy relationships. And so when we don't talk about it, when we don't prepare our young people, we are putting them at greater risk of harm. And that is particularly true for our most vulnerable young people. And so I do hear, you know, the caller saying, I wish that we weren't talking about it. I wish we didn't have to talk about it. I wish it wasn't controversial. But in fact, this is how we protect the vast majority of parents' rights and make sure that schools are safe, thriving environments for all young children. And so, Yeah, I think it's really important for us to get this right.
Let's go to the phones now at 800-222-9455. Nina in Elgin on line 4. Nina, thank you for calling in.
Yes, this is Nina. I was very, very in support of this when I learned that my daughter, who's studying kindergarten, will be learning about the proper terms for body parts and bodily autonomy, just things that children should know to stay in the world. And I think it's very valuable, and I agree with everything that your expert was saying.
All right, Nina, thank you so much for the call. We appreciate you sharing your perspective. We got a text message from Abby as we were having this conversation, said, "My kid came home yesterday and asked about the word gay. This informs me that my child's school is opting to have these conversations, and we are elated. My parents were uber blunt about sex and everything surrounding it. My husband's family, not so much. But as parents, we agreed these are to be discussed. The reality is that schools are a safe space for these talks to occur. But the other texter is accurate. There are segments of the population that makes these conversations harder and unable to occur. It's a hard line to walk." I also want to get a call in from Christine in Springfield on line 1. Christine, hello? Thanks for calling.
Hello.
Hi, Christine. Go ahead.
Hi. Can you hear me fine?
We can hear you great. I understand you're a nurse.
I am. I'm a registered nurse, and I have opinions. I have strong opinions about sex education. I take care of what I consider a marginalized population. I take care of often very nonverbal and not like a client. And so I feel like even those people are, any marginalized person needs to have the ability to understand sex at the ability they're able to understand it. From a very early age, well before 3, I feel like it's appropriate to be speaking about the correct name for things and saying, you know, this is yours. This is a special part of your body. Nobody can touch this except for you, mommy when she's changing your diaper, and your doctor if mommy says it's okay, or daddy, you know. And I think we can't ignore the fact that children are growing up completely ignorant, and they're getting this information from somewhere, and it needs to come from a reliable source that is paying attention and has a comprehensive view on what's going on with sex from a public health perspective and like child abuse and from a lot of perspectives.
All right. Christine, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your perspective. Really appreciate that. And Superintendent Wilder, I'd like to ask you maybe to respond to some of the things we've heard here, especially about, right, if these conversations are not happening in schools, you know, the full gamut of these conversations, are they happening in homes? How do you respond to that?
Yeah, you know, I think Alex's point earlier was really good. You know, even in communities where, you know, we think the majority of families are having these robust conversations, whether it's about sex education or history or other issues, you know, there are always going to be a percentage, you know, a portion of the community where those conversations aren't happening. So, you know, there is a risk there. And, you know, I think the point was well made. And I think that's kind of the beauty of at least how it's been handled in Illinois, that the standards are available. Local school districts can make that decision. You know, in our community, we felt like the decision reflected the values in our community. But in other communities around the state, you know, that's an issue that they're going to have a conversation about it and make those decisions. And, you know, one of the challenges of public education is that, you know, we welcome students from every walk of life, every background. Sycamore happens to be a unit school district, so we have students as young as early childhood, all the way up to senior year in high school. And we operate a life school to the college, the last caller's point. We operate a life school where we have students that are 19, 20 years old and you know, maybe have different needs than some of our other students. And in trying to make these challenging decisions for students from all of these different backgrounds can be difficult. And I think, you know, this is an important topic. But again, in our community, we appreciated the opportunity to make that decision based on our community's values. And in speaking with, you know, colleagues around the state, I know they appreciated the opportunity to do that too. But certainly a really important point to keep in mind is that not all families will have the conversation, and even some of the families that do have the conversation may not have, you know, accurate information. So I think it's a very, very good point.
Well, that dovetails nicely with a comment we got over email during the show. Somebody doesn't want to use their name, that's fine. But they said, I don't have children, so I can't answer from a parent's perspective, but I am a nurse. From a public health standpoint, I can say without a doubt that the general public is sorely lacking in basic understanding of human anatomy. It's not enough for parents to say, don't have sex or don't get pregnant. Kids who don't know about sex, their bodies, diseases, pregnancy or consent and so forth, turn into adults who don't have that knowledge. This isn't political or religious, it's science, and everyone deserves to have a basic understanding of how their bodies work. Let's get one more caller in for now, Galen from Sycamore on line 3. Galen.
Yes, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to say my piece here. Yes, I am from Sycamore. My daughter attended Sycamore Public Schools, but that was many, many years ago. Hopefully, sex education is better now than it was then. I remember that years ago she brought home, as a 16-year-old, a 2-page handout with a rolled-up condom, picture of a rolled-up condom. So I provided her with much more explicit sex education, but in a nutshell, the point I want to make is that I can absolutely guarantee you that 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old kids are seeing pornography. It's very easy for them to view pornography. And I believe that many, many parents do not know that this is happening. And I believe that sex education offered by well-trained sex educators following the national standards do a lot to countermand the ill effects that are found in kids who view pornography at 9, 10, 11, 12 years of age. And people can disagree with me that they're not seeing pornography, but I can absolutely guarantee you that
All right.
from my experience in talking to youngsters, they do see pornography.
All right, Galen, that is a great point and a great launching point for furthering our discussion. Thank you so much for calling in. We really appreciate that. Alex, how about that? Is pornography filling in a gap in sexual education in America?
I mean, it did for me. You know, I think when you learn very early on as a kid that your parents are not really safe to talk about these things, they freeze up, you know, they swat your hand away when as a child, when you're, you know, just exploring your body, when they can't say the words, you learn really quickly that they're not safe to talk about. But we're curious beings, we're curious species, and sex is something we're immensely curious about. And so I think kids learn very early, if their parents aren't safe, they're going to find it somewhere else. And with ubiquity of pornography, that's where I turn to understand, like, how do I make this sex thing go well for me? And in pornography, you know, watching pornography for sex education is like watching Fast and the Furious to learn how to drive. It is fantasy. it is not reality. And you know, we can debate about pornography. I have a lot of complicated thoughts about that. But I think, you know, often we have to, parents, you know, especially if you're very concerned, if you're going to school board meetings trying to fight sex ed curricula, you have to be very clear that the alternative isn't like keeping your kids innocent. It is teaching your kids that the adults in their lives are not safe places to go to talk about these things, and often driving them into hiding things about sexuality, turning to unsafe sources, their peers, peer pressure, movies, pornography to learn these things. So that's the alternative that we're talking about. And so I think we have to be, you know, And almost no other place is less information going to keep kids safer. So why do we think that's going to be the same for sex?
Christine, do you have thoughts on that or anything else that some of the callers had to say?
Oh, I co-sign everything that has been said at this point. And we have spent a lot of time talking about sex education as being a way to prevent unplanned pregnancies, which is true. But I want to say, when we use public science, public health science to back national sex ed standards, we are seeing that, again, it improves sexual health outcomes such as delaying the onset of sexual activity, reducing the number of sexual partners, reducing the risk of risky sexual behavior. So you're practicing safer practices. You're lowering adolescent birth rates. You're helping to prevent child sexual abuse, intimate partner violence, and sexual violence. You're creating a safe school environment and improved mental health outcomes for all young people in those schools, including the most vulnerable LGBTQ, young women, minorities in the schools. You're increasing healthy relationships and understanding how to navigate healthy boundaries with yourself and with your peers. The benefits are so much broader than just whether or not, someone is not going to get pregnant. It encompasses all of that, and it gives people the tools to navigate their bodies, their relationships with others in a much more healthy way. And I think all of us could benefit from that kind of information, particularly as our world becomes more diverse. And we are seeing, I mean, we are really following the leadership of young people who are telling us this is the reality in which we are living, and we need the information to help us do that in the most healthy way. And so I think to the points of all of the callers, if you are not providing fact-based information and responding to kids' questions clearly and truthfully, they're going to find alternative sources, and we have no ability to ensure that those sources are safe and accurate and are going to help our young people make the best decisions for themselves.
Okay, we are almost out of time. I do want to try and get in one more caller. Natalie is on line 4 from Peoria. Natalie, thanks for calling in.
So I just wanted to call in and mention, as somebody who grew up in a really conservative environment in Wisconsin, we did not have sects that addressed things like how LGBTQ members of the community might be engaging in sex that's not PIV, and that's something that I think is going to hopefully be really helped by these standards. I also, as a college educator, like the amount of misinformation that I hear just in the halls of college campuses is huge. So having some sort of universal standards of what science backs up what types of safe sex practices would make a difference in so many teenagers' lives, but especially those who are marginalized due to sexual orientation, gender identity, or who are in communities where that information is just simply not being shared. Like growing up in a very conservative school district, that information was not accessible. It was solely about preventing pregnancy, when really there's a whole level of safety involved in psychological safety, having positive sexual experiences, mm-hmm. feeling supported, and feeling entitled and confident in saying no to certain sex acts if that's something you don't want to participate in, all of which happens when we discuss sex as a normal and natural part of life.
All right. So. Thank you so much for the call, Natalie. We really appreciate you sharing your perspective with us. And that's it. We're going to leave this conversation there. There is obviously a lot here, and I'm sure we'll be continuing to talk about this in the weeks and months and years ahead. Christine Harley is CEO of the Sexuality Information and Education Council of the United States. Alex Liu is the filmmaker behind the documentary A Sexplanation. And Stephen Wilder is the superintendent of the Sycamore Community School District 427. Thank you to all of you for being with us today. Thanks to everyone who called in, text messaged us, sent us emails. We appreciate the robust conversation. More to come on the 21st show. Stay with us.